there is a big opportunity for those companies that can establish a competitive advantage through what we expect to be a wide sweeping energy transition. And assessing how a company goes about that, and as an investor in those companies, assessing which of those companies are expected to win, is a very complex challenge.
Welcome to The Greener Way. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar, Executive Director of Media at FS Sustainability. We are recording on Gadigal land, and we pay our respects to the traditional custodians of country and elders, past, present, and emerging. Our guest, Will Farrell, co-lead climate change at Federated Hermes Stewardship and Engagement Body EOS, is here today with us to talk about one of the topics that investors would probably drop in the hard basket: how to work with hard-to-abate carbon dioxide-emitting sectors. Will, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about Federated Hermes.
So Federated Hermes is a global asset manager with $840 billion US dollars in assets under management. And as you say, I work for the engagement and stewardship business, EOS, within Federated Hermes. And our clients are global institutional investors. So we represent $2.1 trillion US dollars of assets, on behalf of which we engage with listed companies on sustainability issues that we believe will promote long-term shareholder value.
So this is definitely right up your alley. Let's start with the why. Why is it challenging to get these carbon-emitting sectors, whether it's aviation, shipping, primary chemicals, to consistently reduce emissions?
It's a very good question. We see two principal reasons why the next stage in the transition is particularly difficult for these sectors. One is simply to think about these sectors as systems and as part of what is a very complex economy. And therefore, even if the economics are very attractive, we've seen that with renewables often being exceptionally low cost and being an extremely attractive opportunity for companies looking at their resilience through the transition. But often they're reliant on a whole suite of dependencies to access those opportunities. So for example, infrastructure today remains fossil dependent. And therefore, if you exist, as many of those sectors that you listed, within a very complex value chain, then switching a key input or an output within that requires a whole sweeping change to that infrastructure. And there are many coordination challenges within that, even if the economics would make plenty of sense. The other side to it, within that system effects, is simply economies of scale. Electric vehicles is a really great example where a few years ago there was apprehension about the cost of overhauling our infrastructure, charging infrastructure. Could the average consumer really afford a switch to lithium-ion batteries rather than the internal combustion engine? But now that trend is almost unstoppable. More than 50% of vehicles sold in China today are electric vehicles, and that's really a market-led transition globally. Aside from those system effects, we see policy as a key enabler of accessing this next stage in the transition. And that's partly because in some sectors, if we take cement as one of those hard-to-abate sectors, the fundamental chemistry of producing cement will always emit a certain level of CO2. And so most companies in this space, when we're discussing their future resilience, rely on certain climate technologies to bridge that gap to net zero, often carbon capture and storage. And if we think about adding that sort of technology to a production mix, that will always, however cheap carbon capture becomes, it will always add a cost to the system. And therefore, we see policy as being a key enabler for these companies to be able to take that investment. For example, a carbon price that incentivizes investment in CCS technologies.
It comes across to me that this is what management calls a wicked problem, right? It's not just like you switch on and off and that would be okay. So there's kind of a consequence, a series of things that need to happen before we can get there. So you've actually mentioned something that's quite important about a market-led change with the EVs and also with regulations. But there's a sense that the solutions right now are more expensive
than traditional processes. Can you just walk me through that or explain why that is?
Yeah, absolutely. If we take a sector like primary chemicals, much of the reason why those new solutions, those climate solutions, appear so expensive is because for the last 50 to 100 years, we've established an extremely complex and interconnected global production system of especially commodity chemicals that are therefore operating at often maximum efficiency, significant economies of scale, and are strategically located where today's economics are optimal. And to then shift some of those extremely large assets to circular chemicals or install, like I say, alternative technologies, on day one, you aren't going to access those same economies of scale. Mm-hmm. And much as the industry has experienced moving down the cost curve through research and development over the last 50 years, we're very much at the beginning of that. So we do observe some chemicals companies exploring chemical recycling technologies so that they can recycle feedstocks. And ultimately, that could be cost competitive. But at today's scale, it's difficult to replicate the sheer economies of scale of primary chemicals.
And I think it's great to pause there in terms of the milestone. Like you're saying, we're just at the beginning of this entire new journey where we're starting to rethink how we consume energy, how we produce energy, and all of that. There's so many things that I want to talk about, but let's start first with the policymakers. You've said in the past that for us to achieve an enhanced net zero system and be more economically efficient, you truly need the support of the policymakers. And this is currently an uphill push. What are the solutions? What should we debate? What are the things that investors should understand about where we are at the moment with the policymakers, with the regulation?
It's an extremely complex policy picture at the moment. I'd say divergence is a key theme. So it's much less clear what incremental policy progress investors and companies can expect over the next few years.
And is that more so in the last 6 months, even with the US and the reversal of a lot of the policies, that the conversation has changed?
I would say so. It's added uncertainty into the system, but it's very much been an emerging trend over the last couple of years, including in Europe and some of the emerging markets that we focus on. So overall, I'd say as the world has confronted the energy transition challenges, some of that political challenge has begun to bite. Over the long term, we still expect an inevitable policy response. Over the long term, we expect the transition policy to be supportive pretty much globally in response to heightened physical climate risks. And also because some of the economic arguments are extremely strong. So if we take the case of Australia, as investors and our companies looking at how we try to establish some certainty on the policy outlook, a very key element to that is showcasing the opportunity in the transition. So for example, I often have been quoting while I'm out here that South Australia has its hydrogen strategy that was assessed as being having a 21% cost advantage in shipping green steel to Europe versus green steel produced locally. And that was a study commissioned by the Port of Rotterdam. So that is a huge economic opportunity for Australia and one that investors and companies can best capture if policymakers provide some of that forward-looking certainty on how they will support that early stage in the transition, because recognizing that today there are barriers to investing in research and development. Huge capital expenditure projects require some of that long-term policy certainty. So how best can policymakers address that?
And that's certainly music to the investors' ears to say, hey, this is a 21% advantage and we're doing the right thing. So that's with the policymakers. What about with the suppliers, the partners, the customers? How can they all help as we move towards this kind of new economy and more towards renewable energy?
Yeah, it's a very good question because the value chain coordination is one of the critical challenges. We often, through our engagement with public companies, hear this chicken and egg problem. So a company might be ready to move at, for example, producing green hydrogen, say, but their customers are not yet willing to pay.
Right.
And similarly, it could be that a company, for say a cement company, is willing to embed greater circular practices into its production, for example, recycling demolition waste, but it says it doesn't have the upstream value chain to deliver at scale demolition materials that can really be used. In a way, part of the answer here is policy, because policy clarity can enable partners across the value chain to coordinate efforts.
It goes back to the political certainty so people can actually make decisions, yes.
Exactly. And the flip side to that is today in our engagement work with those companies, proactively seeking those partnerships across value chains, because there are some commercial opportunities today where, if we take that cement example, there are cases of success where cement companies have successfully moved upstream, accessed demolition material, and also tapped cost savings as a result of that. So capturing a climate opportunity at the same time as a commercial one. So engagement across the system, we call it system-wide engagement or systemic engagement, can be a really powerful tool.
And you are here in Australia to speak with the members of the Australian Council of Superannuation Investors. By way of background, ACSI has been one of the first to truly champion ESG and responsible investing. I remember more than a decade ago, they were encouraging journalists to talk about ESG through their ESG prize. What would be your key message to those who will be attending that event?
The key message is that there is a big opportunity for those companies that can establish a competitive advantage through what we expect to be a wide-sweeping energy transition. And assessing how a company goes about that, and as an investor in those companies, assessing which of those companies are expected to win, is a very complex challenge. Often it comes back to governance. So how are boards thinking about reimagining their future through the energy transition? How does that then translate into an advocacy strategy that supports a company to transition through the policy that we've discussed, but also supports a transition that is commercial for that company, unlocks its competitive advantage? And a lot of that work can start today. So companies can, without significant capital expenditure today, they can start establishing their technology competitiveness. They can start evaluating their resilience through the transition, putting together an advocacy strategy, reaching out to value chain partners. And as much as investors, we can encourage companies to take that broader mindset for boards to rethink and reimagine their competitiveness in the future. That's an incredibly powerful role for investors and stewards to take.
And even refer to successful case studies, like what's happened in South Australia, and you can see that there is concrete evidence that you can save so much. And we're not talking about 3-5%. It can be in the high teens. Will, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is The Greener Way. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar. Thank you for listening.
The Greener Way podcast is a product of FS Sustainability. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement, and if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.